Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to Grilling JR. This is Paul Bromwell, and I'm joined by the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross. JR, how are you this week?
Pretty good, thank you. I'm just trying to get my my lighting issue solved. Of course, it falls just as we're starting. So anyway.
It's okay. I can see you, and the good news is we can hear you. And that's
all right. Well, good.
That's the most important.
I guess so. I hope so. Knock on wood. We'll see. Yeah.
So how have things been going, JR? Doing a little traveling, and Dynamite's been going well. Rampage is all the build up to the big pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's been a hectic time. I think the busiest time I can recall being in AEW, and certainly, at least in my humble opinion, the most important week in the 3-year history of AEW, quite frankly. You know, being in Vegas, a lot of tickets sold, people having a great time. They were ready to travel. So it's pretty cool stuff. I'm very excited about what we're doing, and I hope everybody else is too. I don't know. We're recording this a little bit out of sequence, so I'm not even sure when it airs, but I know where I'm going to be in a couple of days. I'm going to be in Vegas for 4 days, I think it is, and then in LA for 2 days. And coming back, I'm going to come back then to Oklahoma. It cuts the flying time in half. Then from Oklahoma the following week, I'll go to Kansas City, which is a nice short flight. So, but things are good, you know, just staying ahead of the travel curve. And it is what it is to travel, but we're having fun. And I can tell you that the cards are awesome. And it's going to be really hard to, quote unquote, steal the show at any of our events in Vegas or LA, because it's a special opportunity for everybody to really shine. And I hope they take that opportunity and make that happen.
Yeah, no, it's this one, JR will drop the Thursday before the big pay-per-view. And I was looking at the card last night, man, we're finally getting that dream match, the Hardys against the Young Bucks. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
And then Punk in the main event with Hangman. So definitely a lot to look forward to. AEW has a lot going on, and you're going to be there involved in all of it on the call.
Right.
For the pay-per-view. So that's going to be fun. The Owen Hart finals. Looking forward to that one. That's
yeah, been a good tournament. There's a lot of great matchups.
Yeah.
And there are matchups with involving people that take great pride in their work. They're not going to go out there and say, okay, I need to do something so spectacular that it's jaw dropping. I don't think that most of the guys don't have that mentality. I think a lot of them say, we're going to have a great match. We want to have the best match on the show. So, and whomever is the one that can unlock that puzzle, put all the pieces back together, good on you. So I'm looking forward to it. I just think it's going to be great. The atmosphere is super. The fans I don't know. There's not even tickets left.
Yeah. So, It's going to be a big weekend, but listen, let's talk about what we're here today to discuss. And that is one of your fellow AEW team members, none other than fellow Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts, born Aurelian Smith Jr., May 30th, 1955, JR. So he's about to celebrate his 67th birthday in just a few short days. When do you first remember hearing about or meeting Jake? Was it when you were both starting under Leroy McGurk as refs, or was it prior to that?
Yeah, I think he was a referee.
Yeah, he was.
I think he was a referee when I first, came across him. son of Grizzly Smith. Grizzly Smith was like a road agent, producer, coach, whatever you want to term you want to utilize. So I think that's the first time I came across Jake, and I'm sure at that time he probably was in his late teens, early 20s, I'm guessing.
How well did you know his father, speaking of Grizzly, during this time period? How did you enter, you know, meet
him? Well, I worked with him pretty much, you know, on a weekly basis. So I didn't know him as well as you might assume, but we had a business relationship. Pretty much that's it. I didn't travel with him. He didn't travel with me. Everybody has their thing, you know, but I've worked with Grizz almost every day. I learned a lot from Grizz. Grizz is a real good, Finnish guy and reliable. He was always on the road, and I don't know to Grizz's, you know, the allegations and things of that nature that Grizz had, I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but I do know he knew wrestling, and I learned a lot from about basic fundamental wrestling from Grizzly Smith, no doubt. Hmm.
Would certainly make sense. You know, we would learn just how, kind of the master of strategy and a technician and, Jake the Snake would turn out to be. So you have that influence there. What were your first impressions of Jake like in the ring or promo work? Do you think he was one of those guys when you first started seeing him develop and working that, hey, this guy, he has the it factor.
Well, he did have the it factor. And he was a student of the game, to say the very least. He was really a savant, in my estimation. And Jake had no problem. He thought like a heel. Now, he was an effective babyface. There's no doubt about that. But by and large, I think in a natural sense, Jake was a natural born heel. And that, his promos, talking low and making you listen, things of that nature, just common sense stuff that nobody else was doing. Jake picked that up and he used that as a foundation for his, verbal contributions to his game. So, he was ahead of his time in many, many ways, was Jake Roberts.
So JR, Jake spent most of the late 70s working in Canada for Al Tomko's Vancouver All-Star Wrestling. And then he would move over to Stampede for Stu Hart, where he really revitalized his career there. Did you happen to get a chance to see any of Jake's work up there or hear about that?
I only heard about it. I didn't see it. Different day and time as far as sharing audio and video and things of that nature. So no, I didn't see his work. But from what everybody told me, he was ahead of the curve. He was, you know, for a guy with this experience level, he didn't wrestle like he was inexperienced. So he got it real early on. But because of the nature of the television beast, I didn't see much of his work from his Canadian stays. But he worked a lot. And that's what guys were looking forward to when they go there, working for Al Tomko or for Stu Hart, was ring time. And you may not make a ton of money. Then again, you may do all right, but you're going to get plenty of reps. And that was crucial for the advancement of any talent. How much ring time can you acquire? Big deal. It's a real big deal.
Well, Jim, he would continue to get those reps and in an area where you were for you to see. And that was when he came back to Mid-South in the early 80s. This is where I think he takes the next level or the next step in his progression. Is this where the DDT is invented down here in Mid-South in the early 80s for Jake?
I'm not sure. It might have been. Yeah. It might have been there or in Atlanta, I'm guessing. It's just, I'm not being evasive. I just don't know the correct answer to put in historical terms or a timeline, because Jake seems like he's been doing the DDT forever. I don't remember him not doing it, quite frankly. It's such a dominant finishing move. And stressing the point, it was a finishing move. It wasn't a transition spot. It wasn't a false finish spot. When you get caught with the DDT, you lost. And, you know, I think that's some smart wrestling. And Jake, he protected that finish. And he did it the right way.
Man, you're absolutely right. Even, you know, I was first exposed to him as a kid in WWE or WWF at the time. And, That was when he slapped that person's body right into under his arm. You knew it was over. You knew it was over. You knew we're going to see the snake. Now, to your point, JR, it's a transition move, unfortunately, in wrestling. And I know wrestling evolves, but man, the buildup, it was there. And that was the finisher. And it was all Jake Roberts, the DDT. He did. You mentioned it earlier that he really honed his craft, worked in a lot of areas. He would have some runs in Mid-Atlantic. He worked in Georgia. He worked in World Class. He was in Florida. And this is all in between his Mid-South runs. You got to think this, it was a good idea for him to get all this exposure in the different territories around this time, just to really kind of perfect his craft.
Yeah. He's a sponge, and the more content and material you can provide a sponge, the better off they are in the long haul. So, and Jake had a lot of really good teachers, good influences, even though he probably was ahead of the game mentally, than probably 90% of the guys I'm referring to. He was just a natural. And I think him working with a lot of top talents, top promoters, productive territories, served him well. You know, like you said, he's going to be 67 soon, and he's still contributing. You know, anybody that's got a chance to sign Jake to a personal appearance or a seminar or a Q&A or things like that, you should not hesitate. He's just brilliant, and he can provide those that are listening information that they can't get anywhere else. He's at the end of a long breed of talents from that era. And so anytime I think that if you're a wrestling promoter or a aficionado and you want to share the knowledge of some of these veterans, that's a hell of a place to start with Jake Snake Roberts.
Well, JR, your career is interwoven with Jake the Snake's career. And I have a clip here we're going to play. And man, this is a lot of fun. This is your glory days. This is back in Mid-South. It's January. It's 1986. And he had some big feuds with Ron Garvin and Dick Slater, but this is a memorable moment. And he's going to put Dark Journey here in the DDT. This is Dirty Dick Slater's valet at the time. So let's take a look at this, and we'll bring back all the memories for you. Let's check it out.
Now let's do it my way and not your way. We'll just extend the DDT. We won't use the DDT. It's not using the DDT, I mean. Take away the DDT.
You're telling me you'll put this on the line if I won't use the DDT? Hey, man.
Exactly, you're right.
You know, they may call you Mr. Unpredictable. They may call you Mr. Unpredictable, but they should never call you stupid, because that's the best thing I got. You keep out of this. It's the best thing I got going, and you're going to take that away from me. That's the only way?
That's it. That's the only way I'll sign a match. Take the DDT away. I'll sign a match at any time.
I tell you what, Slater. You keep out of my face one more time. That's it. Let me tell you something, Slater. I won't use an EDT if you'll get that Jezebel out of here.
Oh, that's my word, the Jezebel.
Is that good enough for you, my man?
All this is it.
Are you trying to keep
no script, no writers?
She's trash, Slater. She looks good, but she's still trash.
Dark Journey is spraying in the eyes of Jake Roberts in this.
It looks like Dark Journey has sprayed something in the face of Jake the Snake Roberts. It's pandemonium. Jake has it.
That's a that was an EDT. Fans are crazy in the crowd.
My goodness. Jake the Snake has just DDT'd Dark Journey.
As I mentioned, that was Joel Watts, on color. So Joel and I did that. That was a hot show, no doubt.
Wow, that was awesome.
And here's the other thing about Jake. He knew when to do it and how to do it. And the timing was just there. It's like saying, well, could he have done that DDT on Dark Journey a little earlier and it'd be just as effective? Probably not. He didn't stay too long. He got his business done and it was effective. And you saw the great marketing example of research, so shall we say, because the crowd was on their feet. They're jumping up and down.
Insane.
They're going crazy. So it set up a real good match, a good series with Slater, who Dickie was crazy. But boy, he's a hell of a worker when he was motivated. He's so much akin to Terry Funk was Dick Slater that it was kind of frightening at times. I'm not saying Dick Slater was better than Terry Funk, because I don't know if anybody in any incarnation was better than Terry Funk, quite frankly. But boy, it was something else. That was a hot night. It was good. Here's the deal.
Yeah.
The angle worked, and it worked because the two talents executed an ad lib. And people take that for granted. Oh, okay. Well, sure. You know, they make it look easy, especially Jake Roberts makes it look easy, but it wasn't easy. And, they're floating by the seat of their pants. And I got all this respect in the world for guys like Jake Roberts, and still do. Like I said, I think he's an asset that somebody could utilize, for seminars or whatever, because he understands the basic fundamentals of pro wrestling. And unfortunately, that's not the case with everybody. There are not many of those Jake Roberts guys left. So anybody that's not taking advantage of that, is making a mistake, in my opinion.
And to your point, JR, about the ad lib and feeling the crowd. I mean, even what he was doing with the referee, if you get in front of me one more time, that was just great. That was
Eddie Gilbert's dad, Tommy.
Yeah.
Big star in Memphis for years and years, and did some nice work for Cowboy. And then when his wrestling days were over, a Cowboy made him a referee, and Tommy was a real good referee. He understood the business. Another guy that we had, a lot of our young talents had the luxury of being in the ring with, even though Tommy was in the ring as a referee. We can't, even though WWE still doesn't acknowledge the names of the referees.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that, quite frankly.
Officials. They're all officials.
I'm not going to go into some tirade about it.
I know.
But bottom line is, I think if anybody's on your TV show, whether it be your ring announcer like a Justin Roberts, or whether it be referees, they're stars.
Give them a brand. Yeah, a brand.
If you don't position them as somebody special, look, they're working for you.
That's right.
You put them on television. So why aren't they being recognized? It's the question.
I'm with you too. I mean, then think about later on in their career when they want to do an autograph show. If nobody knows their name, what does it matter? At least they have their name, their brand. And you've helped promote that through the years. You know, you think about the great referees, Earl Hebner, Mike Chioda, whoever. People know their names. So yes, I want to go see, meet him. If you don't know any of the officials, then how do you know their brand or who they are for them and their future too? I don't know. It's just, I'm with you. So before we get off on that tangent, so let's talk more about this Mid-South run. This was red hot. The territory was crazy. By the way, for those that didn't see the video, Jim Ross is full tuxedo in the middle of the ring for that whole exchange. As I said, you're just woven throughout Jake's career. Tell us a little bit about the heat with Jake and Bill Watts when he left the territory.
Well, not unlike a lot of guys, you know, it's either about cash or creative. You know, we overanalyze the shit out of this matter, but generally speaking, when wrestlers leave a territory and it's acrimonious, it has to do with one of the two C's, cash or creative or both. So, I think that's where that was. I don't think it was anything really extraordinarily unique or different. And the other thing too, is that Bill realized that Jake was not the average bear. He was smart and, probably would have been a hell of a booker, but you know, it's not how the hand was played, but, I don't think anything all out of the ordinary for those two guys.
Okay.
A Cowboy wanted to do it his way, and Jake thought his way was the right way. And Jake may have been absolutely spot on, but I don't think it was extraordinarily unique, quite frankly. Cash and creative pretty well cover those answers.
Gotcha. Well, it moves, Jake moves forward, and it moves forward in a big way for him, JR, because he gets his big break that he's been looking for, joining the WWF in 1986. He already had the snake moniker for several years at this point, but this is when he start bringing in the actual snake with him to the ring too. So what did you think about this whole twist and dynamic? Obviously the Vince McMahon and WWF influence. Hey, pal, you're going to bring a snake with you. What did you think about that?
Well, I'm sure it was Vince's idea and a collaborative effort with Jake as well. Jake, I think, was lucky in as much as most promoters would not have dealt with the snake. It's maintenance. It's got to travel. It's got to eat. You know, it's got to be protected and all these things. And when you got a crew of wrestlers that are ornery and wanting to play pranks and ribs, you know, sometimes a snake, not unlike Matilda, the British Bulldog's bulldog, unfortunately, it became the blunt of some, or the butt of some jokes. So, but I think Vince was the right place, the right time for Jake, because Vince would go to the expense and make the arrangements to have the snake on hand. Because once you get to a certain point and you see the snake on television, it's so involved in all these angles that the snake almost had a, snakes even had the names. Referees don't, but snakes do.
Damien. Hey, listen, I talked Tony Chimmel and Mike Chioti used to drive those trucks all over, and they had a truck that had Matilda. It had Damien. I think it might even had Frankie in there. They had like a petting zoo on wheels just driving these trucks around with all these animals at the time. Were you paying attention, though, to his work in the WWF when he was there for those 6 years prior to you joining in 92?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was a big fan of Jake's work. Always have been. Because he thought things through. Things he did may have been uncomfortable, but they were realistic. It made some sense, and it kept you tuned in for the next time. And so, I was almost a big fan of Jake's work because he brought logic to the scenario. He was a villain. He's best suited to me as a villain. I loved his heel work. And because the promos are just, you know, spooky, different. How the other guys didn't figure out that the more you scream, the more people tune out. Same way now. You got a guy that's just, they're just yellers. Like, I'm old yeller, I guess.
That was good.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate my writing staff today. That's funny too. But you know, he was always a guy that you wanted to see what was next. And, it was always fun to watch, to catch up and see what's going on. If I didn't have time to watch a whole WWF show at that time, or didn't have access to all the easy streaming and taping things, it was harder. It was more challenging, but if I could, and I knew Jake was on the show, I would try to watch. Because I knew he was going to do something unpredictable and something that would make me think and not insult my total intelligence as a wrestling fan.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
He had so many good feuds back in those days, JR. I mean, I think about Steamboat, Honky Tonk, Rick Rude, Andre, DiBiase, all the stuff, Randy Savage. Think about when I know you remember this, when they had the snake come out at the wedding. And then he had the snake bite Randy's arms when he was tied up in the ropes. That's got to be one of the highlighted feuds, Randy and Jake the Snake, back in those days.
Yeah, you got to hand it to Savage, who was never one of my favorite people, but I'll never say a negative word about his in-ring abilities. And bell to bell, he was sensational. But I handed to Savage for going along with that angle. I mean, you know, hey, what are we going to do today? Well, we're going to have a snake bite.
Wow.
You know, and those camera shots are very graphic.
Yes.
And what you can see that it wasn't a work. So I tipped my hat to Randy Savage on that deal. And I tipped my hat to Vince for condoning it and going for it, because it was risky and it was different. So, good television in my estimation.
Now, Jared, there's always been talk of Jake getting involved with Hulk. And when they did a segment together one time, there was the crowd went crazy for Jake as a babyface when he was supposed to be a heel. The crowd didn't want to accept it. They were going nuts for him. How big do you think Jake and Hogan could have been together in the WWF?
I think it would have been huge, Jake versus Hogan. And to be even another step, take another step, I would have suggested that Jake beat Hogan and become the champion, because Jake had the ability to make anybody's match good. He could work with baby faces or heels because of his strong individual personality. But it was a little bit surprising that Hawk was booed so aggressively. And so, you know, it just tells you what the audience is thinking.
It's fun because, JR, I went back to our crack staff, especially our guy that really sources and has a lot of access to videos that we can never find. And I said, hey, do you have this clip? I would love to play this for our audience. He said, as a collector, this is one of the hardest clips to find, and I cannot find it. So if you have it out there, we'd love to hear from you. Hit us up. But, man, this was a rare find. Tape traders are looking for that clip everywhere. So there you go on that one. But Jake was also, I want to touch on this, we talked about it already, a master of psychology. His promos, his quiet delivery, you already touched on it, JR, his in-ring work as a heel and babyface. It just felt like, JR, he got the business better than most.
Oh, he did. There's no doubt about that. That's not an assumption, or I think he may have gotten the business better than most. You know, he definitely got the business better than most. And the fundamental aspects of pro wrestling are just as viable today as they were back in Jake the Snake's heyday. It's using basic psychology, the good versus evil, the insecurities, the seven deadly sins. All those things are things that Jake drew upon, because the average Joe, the average wrestling fan, certainly could identify with jealousy or fear or hate, things of that nature. They may not sound, you know, great, but if you're a wrestling villain and you have a great sense of verbiage and you can do that, you're ahead of the curve. It's bump-free money. Talk them into the building and rock and roll from there. So, because you're not going to see Jake Roberts doing any tope suicidas. Not then, not now, not ever. So, you know, I just love this work, and I'm glad that he's, you know, I made a report here on the show about, I saw him at a taping we did for $7 Entertainment on, and talking about some Mid-South guys. DiBiase was there, and Michael Hayes, myself, and Jake. And I just didn't feel that Jake felt good that day. He got fatigued. But we were there a long time. So he carried his share of the water, no doubt about that. But that kind of got out there, and people made a story out of it, you know. That's what I'm saying. Jake Roberts is free to go on his appearances. He's got great doctor's care. Jake Roberts is on top of his medical situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got good doctors. He's got good people around him. And I'm just happier than hell that he's doing as well as he is.
In your estimation, have you seen anyone since or someone that comes close to the master of ring psychology like Jake, JR?
Well, there's a handful. Yeah, there's a handful. He didn't have the exclusive on it. You can, Flair is another one that could come to mind. Terry Funk, I mentioned earlier. Certainly Arn Anderson is an in-ring psychologist. And you're seeing some of the those Arn Anderson-like traits with FTR. They don't do a lot of wasted motion stuff. They don't do anything that you say, well, why would he do that? Why would he, when he's in control of the match, why would he leave his feet voluntarily to try something high risk other than just doing a spot? And FTR just, they don't do spots. They have action, but they've taken a lot of old school traits and old school principles that a guy like Jake or Rick Flair and all these dudes utilized and made it work for
him. I'll throw another guy out there to you. And this is another DDP guy that unfortunately recently passed, with Scott Hall, has always been talking about his mind for the business.
No doubt about it. He was brilliant. And I said at the time, it's unfortunate that Scott wasn't given an opportunity while he was still with us and healthier, to be, on somebody's creative team, or he was assigned, maybe a promoter assigned Scott to a couple of talents to tutor. So I don't have a problem with that. It's time, shall we say, as Mark Henry would say, it's time
for the
main event. So, Mark's got that over, by the way.
He does. Cool.
So anyway, I don't know where we were exactly, but
we were just talking about him being the master in ring psychology and other performers.
He was.
Yeah. Well, he decides to, he leaves the WWF after not getting a promised position in the office, and negotiations had gone on with Jake and WCW for a while in 92. He had agreed to a lucrative deal with Kip Fry to come in reportedly for a high six figure sum. So there you go. That's the transition out and from WWF into WCW. Talk about how impactful it is for someone like a Jake Roberts to be on his way and coming over to the WCW brand at this time.
Well, I think Jake was really looking forward to contributing in Vince's office, but that offer was either withdrawn or rethought. I don't know how you'd put it. But it was a new start. And he wasn't a rookie. He was a veteran. And so, it gave him an opportunity to get back in the hunt. It's the great thing about Jake with his style in the ring. He never did all the acrobatic things, unless you consider a DDT an acrobatic move. He was going to use his psychology. He was going to tell a story and he was going to beat your ass with a DDT. I never saw anybody kick out of the DDT with Jake Roberts utilizing it. And that's what made the hole so effective. Just the threat of going for it was a little bit of a rush.
Yeah, he wound that up. So when the crowd was getting behind him when they knew it was coming. So we talk about the transition over now to WCW, this big deal that he's gotten from Kip Fry. Were you aware of his issues with substance abuse at this time at all, JR?
Oh, of course. Yeah, everybody was. It wasn't a secret. You just didn't know where he was on that journey. Was he getting better? Was he teeter-tottering on disaster? But you always knew that the whispers were going to be about, Jake's drug abuse, alcohol and drug abuse. But, he's such a valuable asset.
Yeah.
That you hope that you can help him and get past these struggles so that he can be the guy that you know you got, and he can earn that big money that Kip Fry was paying him. I saw numbers on that. I'm not so sure about it.
Yeah, I have some numbers here for you and some interesting a curveball that was thrown during this period, and I want to get your thoughts on it. So he waited his 90 days for the contract to go into place, but interesting enough, Cowboy Bill Watts was brought in to replace Kip Fry during that 90 days, And apparently, or allegedly, as they say, Watts tore up the contract and offered Jake a new one for a much lower amount on the 87th day. Excuse me. So what can you share with us about this? Was there heat? Again, I know we talked about it and you said it's cash and creative, but he went from earning $3.5 million a year to $200,000 a year. Is that accurate at all? Is that just dirt cheat fodder? Or
I've never that $3.5 million number is new to me, but I'm not saying it couldn't have happened. A lot of guys make a lot of money there. And Jake was in a main event position to potentially earn that kind of cash. But that, I have never heard that number before. We're talking about it today.
Okay.
And Cowboy was simply trying to, I think, and I'm defensive of him more often than probably I should be. But he was just trying to not overcommit the company to a guy that he had some questions on. And the questions were always not about, can he work still? Can he draw money? Can he still cut a promo? Is he not still the idea guy that we like, we want? Or what? And I just think that it was a matter of being careful and not overcommitting. I'm sure that Kip Fry did not have the background and the intel on Jake that Cowboy would. And I'm also not saying that Cowboy was totally accurate. If Jake was cleaning up and was getting better, then, you know, and Bill comes in and lowballs him on his money, you know, Jake's options now have been limited. He's walked away from the WWE. So where else are you going to go other than WCW to make a decent living?
Do you recall, JR, any tension between him and Watts at the time after he came in with all this going on?
Well, of course. How could there not be?
Yeah.
How could there not be? And it was a very unfortunate. It got too personal. You know, I've hired guys that I didn't particularly like. I didn't have Christmas dinner with them. I didn't exchange cards. But if I thought they were going to help the company I was being employed by, then so be it. You get them on the team. You get guys on the team to create a unit that can win games. And certainly with Jake and a positive frame of mind, he could win games for you still.
Speaking of an interesting dynamic, Grizzly Smith, his dad is in WCW at the time. What did you see there between Jake and his father? Was there
not much?
Okay.
They didn't, I mean, I'm sure there was love and respect there to some level, but they always had somewhat of an estranged relationship. And so they didn't, even though they're working the same company, I can't tell you that they were seen side by side every day.
Yeah, lovey-dovey or anything. Yeah.
No, that wasn't their style.
Yeah. What was it? Do you have any memories of working with Grizzly at this time in WCW during this time period?
Well, you know, I wasn't in that area very much.
Okay.
I mean, I was there. Grizz always did his job. You know, he learned real well from Cowboy, from Ernie Ladd and those guys in Mid-South. He was a very reliable guy in that respect. So, and I think he maintained those principles, even in WWE, WWF, whatever it was. And, was a contributing member of the team. Grizz had great knowledge, and great, intel. He understood that he could help a talent with a little wrinkle here or there in our matches. But you knew Grizz was going to be at work. He's going to be on time. He's going to do his job. He's going to do what he was asked to do to the very best of his ability. It's just the fact that the president and how the family came together over the years, the decades, and the generations, Jake and Grizz just were not real close.
Well, JR, we've arrived. It's finally the big debut for Jake, and it's a Baltimore TV taping. It's August 1992. He makes his way in, and buddy, you are on the call, as I said once again for this clip, and it is Goosebump City. He attacks the franchise Sting. We have the clip. Let's take a look and watch it together and listen in to this big debut for Jake.
Wait a minute. What's going on? There's some commotion. Who's that coming through the... That's Jake Roberts. What is Jake Roberts? Roberts doing here? Jake the Snake Roberts slithering into the ring. Jake Roberts attacking Sting. And now he's got the towel. Jake Roberts doesn't even wrestle in WCW. What's he doing here? Jake the Snake Roberts nailing Sting with a chair.
I tried not to use too many pronouns.
Oh, sure, clothesline. He caught the Stinger.
We definitely knew his name.
That was the idea.
Yeah, that was good. I love this energy.
Oh, God. Roberts with that steel chair. Jake the Snake, the master of the DDT, he dropped him on his face and handed that steel chair with a DDT. Jake the Snake Roberts coming out of nowhere. He's manhandled the referees. Slapping Sting in the face. The DDT around the chair. The Stinger's got to be out of it right here. Not another one. Not another one. At all. Another DDT. Right on the chair.
Oh, man. My God, I don't even... He's got that glove, that snake handler's glove. And that, what's going on here? Oh, no. Oh, no. Sting is out of it. The referees have been the locker room is finally emptying, but Jake the Snake. Oh. The Steiners and Ron Simmons there. There's Barry Windham. Sting is hurt badly at the hands of Jake the Snake Roberts. He's got some huge reptile there.
JR, I'm just going to tell you something. You and your commentary take the excitement. It's cool. Jake's there. It's awesome. But that just adds so much excitement level to we the fan at home, the way you describe it.
Just doing my job, officer. Just doing my job.
Well, buddy, I know we joked about, you know, we know his name and stuff, but I'm telling you, that just elevates the whole product. When you get into it like that, all of us are just on the edge of our seats, just like watching a football game when somebody's excited in commentary. It's the same.
I appreciate that, Paul. I did that solo.
Yeah.
And so it makes it a little bit easier because you're not waiting for your partner to interject or to embellish or to add to or whatever. It was just me. And I knew what I was thinking. So I should be able to connect all the dots and get us out of there with heat on Jake and the top star in the company, Sting, injured. That's the two messages. And if you want to break it down even more, we're starting to throw the ink on the contract of a Sting Jake Roberts matchup.
But it's the little things that you do, JR, when you're sitting there and you're saying, when he's about to do another DDT on the chair, no, not another one. It's what we're all thinking, but you're articulating it in an excitement and in a passion of begging. It's just, it takes it to the next level. It's those little details, the minutiae, I think, that just set you apart and kind of bring and suck the fan in. Man, that's what we love. So good stuff. Jake's there. He's arrived. And they pair him with Barbarian and Cactus Jack almost immediately. So what do you think of those three together? Jake, Barbarian, and Cactus Jack.
Well, I liked it. You know, there was an impressive group. You know, Barbarian looked like a Frankenstein monster. And was such a sweetheart of a guy. You knew you had to worry about Barb. He's going to be at work when he needed to be. He's going to do his job when he needed to. All good. And of course, Mick was this diamond in the rough that we're just waiting to break loose. You know, I'm one guy that from day one had tremendous confidence that Mick Foley was going to be a big time player. And he was, and still is to a large degree. He's another guy that, if I'm a promoter and I'm booking card shows or autograph things, I can do a Q&A with Mick Foley and other wrestlers and fans can engage. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because again, they don't make any more Mick Foley's. They don't make any more Jake Roberts. And, but I thought that was an interesting, it was new. And none of those guys are total strangers. So the three man group was new, but make no mistake, the goal was to get Jake over and to get Jake a little entourage, a shelter.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
A faction. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. His in-ring debut for the company takes place at Clash of the Champions 20. So if you guys want to go back and watch that, his debut is on Clash 20. He's teamed with old enemy Rick Rude, Super Invader, who, by the way, was Hercules, and Big Van Vader in a 4-on-4 elimination match against Sting, Nikita Koloff, and the Steiners. A big-time matchup here. And we got some notes here from The Observer. He said, Rude and Roberts and Vader and Super Invader beat Sting, the Steiners, and Koloff in an elimination tag match, which took 15 minutes, 15 seconds. Rick and Vader worked hot spots together and were the highlight of the match and the card. First fall saw Koloff pinned in 7:26 when Roberts pinned him after he collided with Rude. Sting pinned Vader in 36 seconds with a face buster in the second fall. Third fall was back to the Vader Rick Steiner show with them trading hot power moves. And then Rick tried to stand up with Vader on his shoulders, but 395 of dead weight staring at the bottom of him, and that was a bad idea. At least he didn't tear out his lower back, because that much weight, that shaky, is dangerous. Scott was DQ'd in 3:32, and then we kind of go through all the DQs and all the movements there. But the crowd was chanting DDT, DDT, and Roberts finally dragged Rude to the corner, tagged in, and got the pin with the DDT. Best match on the card. He gave it 3.25 stars. This is a good showing for Jake. It looked like he could still go here. And what did you think? Do you think he was still looking good for his first time back in the ring here?
I thought it was good booking. I thought the match is laid out. It sounds a little herky jerky when you're reading it off.
Yeah.
But the idea was to, highlight Jake. That's it.
Yeah.
And we did.
And that was the point of it. He's now, he wins the big match, and he's well on his way now to becoming kind of a top player. Talk about JR, what your memories or recall of him backstage. We've talked about him making his presence felt. He's come out, he's made his debut. We're sold. He's in the ring. What's it like working with Jake backstage at this point?
Well, it was, he was always on top of the game. He always took a hand in his creative. He wasn't going to go out there like a cabbage, all head and no rear end, as Junkyard Dog might say. But I liked, he was always engaging. He was always talking to somebody. He had a lot of young talents that approached Jake for feedback. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? This type of thing. So, but he seemed to be engaged. He seemed to, like, he gave a shit.
Yeah. Well, it was no secret who they were going to align him with early on, especially with his big debut there attacking Sting. And it seemed like he was the perfect heel, though, the perfect foil for such a big baby face in Sting.
Yes, you got to go there. That's what, you know, you can either slow play it like you want a card hand, or you can go for it. And we went all in with Sting and Jake. We believe that would be the match everybody wanted to see if we were able to build it correctly. And I think we are right in that assumption.
Well, we jump right into the build of the infamous match between Jake and Sting at Halloween Havoc 92. And it leads to the spin the wheel, make the deal. And you here on Grilling JR, that's going to be covered in depth because it's the 30-year anniversary of the show. But this match leads to a card that draws WCW's biggest buy rate since Super Brawl II. And Jake and Sting had to have a lot to do with that, did they not?
Of course. Yeah, they probably, I don't want to say everything to do with it, because they weren't out there. They had support staff around them, a cast around them that helped enhance their storytelling. But yeah, that was That's pretty interesting gimmick. I can't remember how we came up with that spin that we will make the deal. It was a kind of a collective effort. I may have come up with the name.
Okay.
But the sensibilities of how you work the match and what's going to be on there were pretty obvious. But it was a gimmick that nobody had used before, at least to any widespread exposure. So I sit here a million times. Wrestling fans like new, and spin the wheel and make the deal was a new stipulation that had a lot of options. So it was, I thought it was well booked. I thought it was a new match, a new marriage, new rivalry. And again, wrestling fans like new, they're willing to try it. And you just hope that you can capture, the genie in a bottle or whatever the hell that
lightning is. In a bottle. Yeah.
Lightning, genie, lightning, Mary, Sally.
We like genies. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Barbara Eden was one of my favorites growing up.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
So Sting gets the win in that big match, but believe it or not, JR, just weeks later, Jake is out of WCW. So, just when, you think you get the ball rolling and things are heating up between, he and Sting, he's gone. And, I don't know if it's the relationship with him and Watts or his demons haunting him or a combination of everything. I don't know if you can recall kind of what the situation was back then, but, he was out.
Well, I think Cowboy and Jake just had a very acrimonious relationship, and Bill trying to quote unquote protect the brand. And there's always that dark cloud over Jake, unfortunately, regarding, substance abuse.
Yeah.
Was he using, was he not using, is he getting better? Is he teetering on another meltdown? What's going on? But Jake never got along with Cowboy, and that's an issue for both Cowboy and Jake. Cowboy should have done all he could do. And maybe he did in his mind, to keep Jake in the fold. And Jake should have done all he could do because of his age and his status in the business, maybe you should try a little harder to get along, both of you. But it just that wasn't in the cards at that time.
It's a good point. And whenever you have two sides involved, both have skin in the game, and it's on both people to try to make things work. So
that's right. Exactly.
It's unfortunate too, man, because here's another opportunity where you could have seen if this would have worked out, maybe more gold, around Jake's waist, in a run here for WCW, but that's just not how it played out for him. So, the next time you run into Jake is during a brief run in Smoky Mountain. What do you recall about Jake's work down there, primarily with the Dirty White Boy?
Well, not a lot, to be honest with you. I remember him being there, and I remember being there as well. It was basically, Jake was just getting a booking because he needed work. I was a loaner. I think Vince loaned me to Cornette, and even toward the end, Corny was, challenged financially, and trying to run a territory and manage all these knuckleheads wasn't easy. So, but he still had the magic. Jake still had the magic, and Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, was a perfect opponent for him. Cornette did a great job of booking Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Nobody bullshit you on that deal. He did a great job. But you see Jake and you say, well, he can still hit a fastball.
Yeah.
He can get on base.
And we got an example of it, here. He's going to do a promo in Smoky Mountain. This is our third and final clip this week, that I want to play for you, but here he is with Bob Cottle, legendary
love Bob.
Announcer. I love Bob too. Got to meet him and just the nicest, sweetest man. So let's check it out together, JR. Here's the final clip of the week.
You see what I see, Tony? Is you are a child trying to play a man's game. You want to come over here and pull a finger? Take a finger. I'll take an arm. You want to reach inside my gut and pull out the stomach? I'll pull out your heart. That's just the way it is. Because when it comes right down to it, I will do absolutely anything to get what I want. Sacrifice? I'll sacrifice anyone. You see, I have my own rules. I do have morals, but they're my own. I come up with them myself, and if need be, I change them tomorrow, and I get what I want. Summer Blast. We're talking Cage. Now, you might think in the back of your little weasel mind that I would be worried about that. But you see, I've been a caged animal all my life. When I was brought into this world, I didn't know how to steal, how to cheat, how to lie. My dear father taught me all of that. Wow. And these nice folks out here taught me that. Because, you see, that's the way of life. So, Tony, Summer Blast in a cage. I don't need a snake. I don't need nothing. Because I've got the one thing that no man can deal with. That's the DDT. Because once I hook the DDT on somebody and I take you to the mat, you don't move. And if you don't believe me, why don't you ask that little scumbag you call your old lady, huh? Ask her what it was like. Ask her what a nice trip it was. Ask her what a ride it was. And if you're lucky, Tony, if you're real lucky, you might survive. But I don't think so. Because nobody's lucky when they play with a snake. Not even you.
The dirty white boy, Jake the Snake.
Not a yeller. My goodness. So it didn't need to.
Whew. Love it. Yeah, that's a good promo. Told a good story.
Yeah.
And again, you go back and say, it's much like one of the things that makes me proudest about being in Tony Khan's AEW hall is the fact that these guys are doing these things in an improvisation.
Yes.
They're doing it ad-libbed. Jake may have had mental notes of the promo he's going to give, and knowing that I'm going to do this in the beginning, I'm going to try to maintain in the middle, and this is my close. After that, there's nothing written down. And so I really admire those talents like Jake Roberts, who could go out there and cut a promo and tell a story that you could visualize as he was speaking. And if you go back and look at that interview again, and even shutting your eyes to the point that where you can say, okay, I see what he's doing. I can visualize this interview. I can visualize these actions. And Jake was brilliant at that, better than just about anybody I can think of.
Taking a few mental bullet points and telling a story on live TV, one take, you don't get a chance to do it again. So impressive, man. And it goes to show not a lot of people can do that and do that well nowadays, unfortunately. And now you've gone to the scripted where you just make it so challenging. I can't imagine trying to memorize a script and then go out and deliver it live. And
it's illogical. It's illogical, Paul. Come on. You show up for work, you fly in, you get there the night before, the morning of, you got a million things in your mind, and now you got to memorize a script that may not be approved until later in the day, which cuts down your time to memorize and interpret copy. So I just think it's a system that's built for failure.
Yeah.
And if you're not talented enough to articulate your feelings in a promo form, you might want to think about another aspect of pro wrestling to be involved in, because this may not be for you. You've got to be able to think on your own and tell those verbal stories. And like I said, nobody was better at it than Jake.
And oh, by the way, once you memorize it, then you got to deliver it like you wrote it yourself and make it believable.
So hard. Yeah, it's really hard.
It's you know, there's so much involved. So we talked about Jake here. Whose idea was it, or who made the decision, JR, do you remember, to bring him back to the WWF in 96? He didn't wrestle at all in 95, but he would return to the Royal Rumble here in January.
Well, star power. He still had name identity. There was a desire to see him. He had, more importantly, the DDT. And he brought that with him, even though it's the Royal Rumble and you're limited by going over the top rope, both feet touching the floor, he still had the DDT. So I just think it was a special added attraction, to get people talking.
Yeah. Any conversation at the time, knowing he was still struggling with the drug and alcohol issues, about potentially bringing him back at this point?
No, not really. I didn't have him. I wasn't in that role yet. I was helping JJ Dillon, but that wasn't my cross to bear. So This wasn't under my purview. But yeah, there's always going to be anytime, even today, if you got somebody that's had a history of drug and alcohol abuse, it never leaves them. They still got to address those issues. And they say, well, what do I do? Well, you stay clean and sober. There you go. There's your answer. What else you need to know? What are you having for lunch?
Hey, big shout out to Dustin Rhodes, by the way, talking about staying clean and sober. He just celebrated a huge anniversary. Yep. I think it was 14 or 15 years I just saw on social media. So kudos to him, man. It's not an easy road to hoe.
Oh, no.
And so that's awesome.
And you live with it daily. You live with it daily, not only in your inner sanctum and your mind, all those things, you live with it daily. And Dustin's done an amazing job. He's got a hell of a school down there in Texas. He's a valuable asset as a coach for AEW. And I know that he works a lot with the ladies.
Yes.
And they love him. He's just terrific. So, and he's improved their execution and their skill sets, no doubt. So, yeah, I'm with you. Congratulations, Dustin. I've known him since day one. And he just got in the wrong lane one day and had a hell of a time getting out of it, but he did. Yep. And now he's a success story.
Yeah. Yeah. 14 years is what it was. So, it can be done, and kudos to him. So JR, they do some interviews with Jake on TV to openly talk about his substance abuse issues. This is when they brought into the storyline a whole feud with Jerry Lawler. So, how hard was it? Was it hard to convince Jake to, hey, let's go there with all the real life issues to present for the world to see? Do you remember any of that?
Well, Jake was smart enough to know that this is what Vince wanted to do. This is a creative idea that Vince wanted to pursue. Being the veteran and understanding the business as he did, Jake knew that now was not the time to try to exercise any leverage about not talking about this very public problem. So he was smart enough to go right along with it. And, you know, and quite frankly, you know, you would hope that it helps some people. It gave an insight on what it's like to be an addict. And it was a tough interview to do. I don't remember a lot about them other than, you know, it was a very sensitive subject. And basically what you do in a situation like that, at least in my role, you set the table and you turn it over to the interviewee. And that's what we did. And so, cause he had plenty to say. I didn't need to give him any words. I didn't need to give him any ideas of what to talk about. We wanted it real and guttural, and it's going to be a little coarse, but, I think when we did it, I think everybody was on board. And again, the theory was that it should help people that want to be helped. So, it was an easy interview to do for me because all I had to do is kind of wind up Jake and turn him loose because he had a lot to get off his chest.
He sure did. To your point too, there's also a level of accountability that happens now when you expose your kind of secrets to the world. And now everybody becomes aware of what's going on in your life and situation. So there's that too, involved with all that. So a lot going on here. And, like you said, the end goal was maybe it helps somebody, you know, hey, there's right. a guy that I cheered for so many years dealing with some of the same stuff that I'm dealing with or what have you. So definitely an interesting storyline and timing here for him and his career. Do you remember at this time too, was there an intention for him? Cause you've said it, how smart he is and how much he could contribute to the business for him to potentially have a full-time writing position when he retired as an actual wrestler.
Well, I think he would do really great in that role. Pardon me. But again, you got to get past that trust factor. Are you okay? Can you handle the responsibilities of this? We cannot have a coach or a producer or whatever word you want to utilize, being a user. Talent see it. They know it. It's just not good. So, again, I said this earlier, once you are identified as a drug addict, and you'll always be identified as a drug addict. Is that fair? Probably not, but it's just the the way that it is. You talk about ball players now. You can talk about a lot of ball players that still have the baggage, you know? So that's kind of how I see that deal. You got to live with it and manage it. And again, how do you handle it? Well, you go clean and sober. If you can't be clean and sober, then you're not healthy and you're not going to help us. So I think Jake probably got a lot of help in that respect from DDP, who was kind enough to share his home and his expertise and all that stuff with Jake. And I'm very, as a wrestling fan, I am very, I'm very proud that I know DDP. I like him. I respect him. And he's done some amazing things for some talents that I can't think of anybody else in the world would do.
Yeah, he has. He's dedicated his life to some guys and really helping them out so much. I think when you talk about legacy, man, that's going to be a huge part of DDP's legacy and what he's done for some of these guys. Just now, I think now he's trying and working with Buff Bagwell, trying to help get him restored. Yeah,
I hope it works. I really hope it works. You know, nobody wants to see Buff leave us too early.
That's right.
He's a young dude, man, and clean and sober. That's your answer. Well, what can I do? How many treatments? And I, it's stay off the shit and learn to live that way and learn to appreciate your life and be grateful for what you have. And, so I hope that, Dallas is successful with Bagwell and, helps him to get past these issues so he can live a long, productive life.
Yeah, that's the goal. Absolutely. So, back to Jake here, he is released in 1997 again. And I want to ask you a little bit about Beyond the Mat. Did you know, or were you aware of all of Jake's childhood history with his father prior to that documentary that was released in 99 JR? Had you heard anything about all that?
Heard it all. Heard it all. Some of you didn't even want to believe, but over a course of time, you find out, well, this is factual. And it's just sad. I couldn't even identify with it. You know, sometimes when you try to solve a talent's problem, you won't put yourself in their shoes and identify with that issue. But hell, I had no way of identifying with that.
Yeah.
That very dysfunctional and unfortunate. So, but, you know, old Jake has just survived. I say one thing about him, he's a survivor, and, I'm proud of him for that.
Unfortunately, goes on a downward spiral from this point. We've heard about the incident at the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view in October of 99. Do you remember at all having any kind of conversation with him at all? It's not during the time when the WWF would send people to rehab, but I'm sure people were keeping tabs on him, you know, during this time period.
Well, he was high on the list of those who are not going to make it. He was seemingly, and it sounds morbid, don't mean for it to sound totally morbid, but it's just truth. You know, he was probably one of those guys in a short conversation. So he was going to be the next to go. And, that's not a good scenario to dwell on, quite frankly. So, again, it's just, it's a powerful, powerful enemy. And, with the help of a lot of his friends and himself, more importantly, Jake wants to be healthy. He wants to be better. And when he's that way, he's brilliant. He's totally brilliant. Even today.
As we walk through his story here, he spent the first half of the early 2000s living in England until UJR interviewed him for a WWE DVD release that was based on him in 2005. And he's still at a very low period of his life. What do you remember that experience, spending that time with him? Do you recall anything from that?
Yeah, I thought it was sad. I thought it was sad. It was disturbing and sad. Wasn't my ideal topic for a long form interview, but it's something Vince wanted to do. And again, the company, WWE, thought, well, maybe we could help others that are in a similar plight. And I think that's the best way to put it. You know, we just wanted to help people and let Jake express himself. Cause he had a carte blanche. We didn't give him a script. We didn't say, here are your questions. I didn't have a list of things to ask. It was just a real free flowing interview. And, I'm glad I did it, I think, but it was sure sad when I look back on it, what we had to address.
Absolutely. Well, the good news is things start to change over the next several years. In 2007, he does enter the WWE's voluntary 14-week rehab program that they had just recently started. You know, kudos to them. You know, everybody wants to take shots at WWE here and there, but here they are starting to do things for talents. This rehab program for, hey, even if you were on the roster years ago, we're going to start sending you to rehab and paying for it. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that, JR.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's expensive. WWE's spending big money on this deal. It wasn't like it was just a token. Oh, they got the money. Well, okay. It's their money. It's not your money.
That's right.
And it's a lot of money. But it was very admirable, and I'm glad that they started that program.
And to your point earlier, he reconnects with DDP in 2012 after getting back on the drugs and alcohol and putting on a lot of weight. But thank goodness for DDP, who essentially saved Jake's life. Again, I know we already just had talked about it earlier, but again, DDP's legacy here is going to be what he had done and worked with. Because I think, honestly, we know we lost Scott Hall. But if it hadn't been for the DDP intervention, who knows what could have happened even there. Just a great dude, a great guy, and a great friend to so many of these guys that have been struggling.
Yeah, no doubt. Doing good things for good people. And I admire Dallas for that. He should be acknowledged endlessly for helping others. Because a lot, like I said, in the wrestling business, known for insecurities and all these things, Dallas just stepped away from all that, and he wanted to do something. He wanted to help. And he was a big fan of Jake's over the years. You know, Dallas had started wrestling in his mid-30s. So he had a lot of time to understand the work, the psychology utilized by Jake. So, we can't give Dallas Page enough credit for kind of helping get everybody back pointed in the right direction. It wasn't a guarantee, but at least everybody was going traveling the right road, I thought.
Let's talk about a really cool and had to be a highlight for you, JR. You're sitting front row for his Hall of Fame speech in 2014 in New Orleans. How great was it seeing had his life had changed, and now all of a sudden he gets to enjoy this moment, man.
It's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would ever happen. And I was pleasantly surprised that it did. And again, he delivered verbally. That was a real hell. It was a hellacious acceptance speech. And I'm just glad that day happened. I was very proud to be sitting there watching the transformation of Jake the Snake Roberts and have him share his life, which I don't know that a lot of people could even survive his life. Whew. He's lucky to be alive.
You're so right.
And a lot of miserable times that he had to deal with. So I've always respected Jake for maintaining his sanity and surviving. You know, Jake Roberts is a survivor.
That should be the title of the episode, Jake Roberts, the Survivor. When he comes in to play for AEW, can you expound what he brings to the table to the younger talent, man? This is a big time move for AEW, bringing him in.
Smart move by Tony Khan to bring Jake in. We have such a young roster. You can't get too many mentors, coaches, whatever you want to say. Tony did a good job with that. I thought that I liked the pairing of, Lance Archer and Jake. I think Lance Archer is one of the more underutilized guys in the wrestling business.
Agreed. He's
big,
great.
Big, rugged son of a gun, nice man, reliable. Can't get too many Lance Archers on your roster. I can promise you that. So, but I thought that was a smart hire by Tony. Came out of the blue to me. I'm not involved in hiring or firing talent in AEW, nor do I want to be. If I had the opportunity, I wouldn't want it. I've done that. I've been there.
That's right.
It's not that I don't care.
Right. But you've already done that. You've experienced.
JR's too old. He didn't care anymore. He's too old. No, I've been there. I've done that.
Yeah.
And you can't have too many cooks in the kitchen. And so, I'm happy that Tony made that hire. It was good for all of us.
Well, have you had much chance to spend any time? I know you're typically in and out on flights and things like that and doing your thing, but have you had any time to spend with Jake or had any conversations with him since you two have been together in AEW?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. So, you know, he dresses, we generally dress in the same locker room. Or I see him at catering. That's where all the old guys go to catch up on the dirt. but yeah, I see him and we laugh about some of our stories. We laugh about some of the people we work with that were crazy and all that stuff. So, it's always a good experience with him.
Good.
I've never seen him in AEW in an altered state. You know, he's got some breathing issues, but that they're being addressed. But no, I always enjoy when I see him in the locker room when he's there, when he's not doing, you know, getting medical situations addressed. It's always a good day.
Yeah. And that's no secret. He does a podcast with DDP and here it's on, you know, part of the group here and he has a, you know, the oxygen in. So there's no secret there, but he is, he's in a good place. He's doing well. It's so good to see him involved and it's cool that you two get to work together again after all these years, as we started with a Mid-South clip with Dark Journey in the middle of the ring, fast forward all these years later. And here you two are at the same wrestling company doing your thing, man. It's just so cool to see.
It's funny the roads we travel, quite frankly. I really enjoyed that clip earlier with Dark Journey. She was man enough or woman enough to take the DDT. And I can assure you that she was not trained to undergo or to take a DDT safely. And that credit is all to Jake. He took care of her. He didn't hurt her. That was a hell of a clip. And it just shows also too, Dark Journey's value, in Mid-South and how that kind of got her career started as well. She was always a great team player. Still is. I keep in contact with Linda, pretty regularly. You know, she's just a unique and interesting person.
I just think it's fun to see the roads traveled in wrestling. To see, you know, you two, here you guys are together. You were in your cummerbund and tuxedo holding the mic. He was right beside you. Now here you are all these years later, 40 years later, still working for the same company. What a great world. Well, happy birthday, 67th birthday, Jake Roberts, from us here at Grilling JR. We hope that you enjoy it and are so glad to see you still moving, kicking, doing your thing in AEW. We do have some fan questions, JR, that I want to get to, so we'll go through those. First one comes to us from TJL66. He says, JR, if Jake was able to stay clean and sober in 96 and 97, do you think he could have stuck around on the creative team through the Attitude Era?
Well, I think we've probably said it often enough in the show today. Any opportunity Jake would get to be involved in creative would probably be a good thing. And with the Attitude Era being edgy and coarse and things of that nature back in the day, TVR, hell yeah, he would have been a great help. But again, the key words that this gentleman mentioned, if he were able to be clean and sober. That's always going to be the mystery.
The big if. Francis Reyes is up next. He said, why do you think he was not pushed in the main event picture?
We just answered that question. Reliability. We were afraid at times, the people in charge, that maybe he wasn't ready for that role and he still has some demons to deal with.
I think a lot of these answers will be similar. Radio McCall says, Jake is one of the best all time in terms of rings in ring psychology. Any chance back then he could have moved into a producer coach role, or was his addiction too much to be reliable? You've answered that over and over. Love the show and glad both of you have a job at AEW.
And we are both glad that you're watching and AEW. It's such, as I said earlier, you know, it's the most important week in my opinion. At least in my tenure, and that's since day one in AEW, I'm a big believer that, you know, that we live in a world of specific destinations, and this is a specific destination week for AEW, whether it be Dynamite or Rampage or, you know, the pay-per-view on Sunday. it's just a huge week. And I think that, you know, we're ready to deliver. And I'm not sure I'll see Jake there. I don't know. I don't know who all gets booked, who doesn't. But if he's here, if he's there, you can bet he'll be one of the guys that the talents will migrate to pick his break.
Yes, I'm sure. Steve Clark Wrestling's up next, JR, and he says, what would your dream Jake the Snake feud be? Maybe Bray Wyatt? Question mark.
Well, for today, no. Jake's not wrestling anymore. And I'm not big on fantasy shit. How do you say that some of those guys that Jake worked with would be supplanted by Bray Wyatt? I can't go there. I think Bray Wyatt's a hell of a talent. There was a specific point in time in WWE where he had seemingly the world by the balls, the short hairs, as Grandpa would say. But I don't think I would put Bray Wyatt over so many of the other guys that Jake worked with, even though in their heydays, which is impossible to gather your arms around, that would have been a very intriguing matchup, if nothing else, just for the friggin' promos.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The promos would have been unbelievable. Michael McClanahan's up next. He says, in JR's opinion, how impactful was the DDT as a finisher during Jake's initial run? And does JR wish certain moves were more protected in today's professional wrestling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to protect them. And that's why the DDT for many, many years has had such impact. It's been protected and taken care of. But yeah, too many established feasible finishes have become transition spots or high spots. And I'm not a big fan of that whatsoever. It gets you out of a rhythm, all those things, at least for me. When I see a DDT, I want a winner.
Yeah.
Or, you know, be near the ropes or do something to help give yourself an out. And that's all because of Jake Roberts. Now he was so staunch in protecting that finish.
It was always fun when he did the finger kind of swirl around and you knew it was coming, man. It was lights out.
Yep.
Two Count Kyle says, hey, JR, I think Jake has done some outstanding work as Lance Archer's mouthpiece in AEW. Do you see him doing any work with anybody else in AEW? If so, who would you like to see him paired with?
Well, Jake's going to be a guy that, as long as his health is good and he feels like traveling. And I can tell you, you know, I have my little health issue that I deal with every week on these flights, and they're no fun. Travel is no fun. And some people may roll their eyes at that, but it's really, it isn't. TSA, screaming babies, double book seats, all kinds of things. It's just hard.
Yeah. Even when you're not sick, that stuff sucks. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the delays, postponements, mechanicals, it's just a high pressure scenario. So, I don't know, man. I don't know who's Jake can help anybody, but you got to understand you're booking him as a TV character in a heel manager role or even a babyface manager role. It's daunting, Paul, because, he can't take bumps. So you're limited on your creativity, and we've seen Jake take a isolated bump here, there, and yawn, yeah. But it's probably not overly advised at this point in time. Maybe that will change, but we're not going to know that till we're down the road a little farther.
Even so, I still love the way that Tony has figured out a way to use legends like Tully, Arn, Jake. You know what I mean? It just seems like it's still having them a show up on TV. They're obviously still respected and remembered. And so I think he's done, you know, a masterful job of incorporating these legends and making sure we don't forget about guys like that.
That's because Tony's still a brilliant fan of wrestling, and he respects what those guys did, how they contributed. And he knows the opportunities they're going to have backstage primarily talking to talents and giving them some feedback, or you might try this, or why don't you take that out, put this in, that type of stuff. So all those brain power is pretty amazing, quite frankly.
Yeah. You can't tie a price tag to that invaluable knowledge that those guys are going to get from those legends. Brad Stanton's up next. He said, why are fans so invested in Jake? People always asked about him on your radio show. So for those not familiar, we play JR's old radio show. We have all the tapes and clips going on ad-free shows. You can check them out there. And so a lot of our guys are getting exposed to those. And Brad's point here is people were always calling into your radio show wanting to ask about Jake Roberts. Why are they so invested in him,
JR? Fascinating in the character. Yeah. Fascinated in the character, I should say. And he got over. And when guys get over, they become topics of conversation. And he had the DDT.
There you go. Brian Fuller with our last questions and comment of the week. And he said, Jake recently commented on DDP's Snake Pit, and that's their podcast together he has with DDP, that he was working the main events around the loop for Mid-South in the early 80s. But was getting paid less, there's your cash and creative, JR, than the two guys that Jake said were supposed to main event the house shows. Jake said he just left for greener pastures without much notice, which I'm sure Watts loved. That's tongue-in-cheek. Did Watts not see any money in Jake at that time? And was Jake relatively skinny for what for Watts is, seemed to like in a top guy?
No, it had nothing to do with his size. It had to do with his out of ring and away from the work habits. Of course, Bill saw money in Jake. God almighty. Anybody would. Leroy McGurk, who was totally blind, would see money in Jake. It's just, of course.
Yeah.
But you still got to have accountability. And again, my number one favorite trait of hiring talent, reliability. And for whatever reason, whether he be right or wrong, Cowboy didn't think Jake was reliable.
And it all boils down to what you said earlier when you were saying it was probably cash or creative. Here it was. Jake admitted it right on his podcast. It was cash.
Right.
And that's why he left. So there we go. Nice. Put a button on that one. And listen, next week, Jim, I'll be back. Yep. There's the warning. It's Paulie. I'll be back with Jim. We're going to be discussing Mick Foley's run as Cactus Jack in WCW. This is the first show drop in June. And JR, we're celebrating another birthday because it is Mick's birthday in June. And so we're going to talk about the beginning of Mick in WCW, your first impression of him, being in and out of the company and then returning, and then his climb up the card as Mrs. Foley's baby boy would start to transcend and become a big star. I'm looking forward to that one, man.
Good story. Good guy. And he overcame his look, the perception of him, to become one of the biggest stars in the history of pro wrestling. So I always relish the opportunity talk about Mick Foley.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Two quick things before we get out of here this week. Adfreeshows.com. If you're not a member, join today. If you're not a top guy, upgrade today. May is the last time you can upgrade to top guy status and be eligible to be a part of Top Guy Weekend in Chicago. It's the same weekend as All Out, AEW's big pay-per-view. JR, you were there last year. You did a panel show with the King, and it was an unbelievable weekend. We were in the green room. You were eating chicken, Chick-fil-A. We were having a great time.
Easy now.
Tell these folks, this is the place to be, isn't it?
Nobody gives a shit about what I'm eating.
It was funny. You were so hungry coming in there. It was so fun, JR. You were hilarious.
I was happy to get the Chick-fil-A, though. That was nice.
I know you were.
I'm kind of a Chick-fil-A guy, kind of good old basic JR here.
That's right.
Those opportunities that Conrad and his team are providing the fans is nothing short of incredible. It is. If you're a lifelong fan, you want to know more, you want to be around these guys, you want to have conversations. My gosh, this is perfect.
It is. It's a dream trip.
Yeah.
So Chicago, join adfreeshows.com. Get in it, get involved, meet JR. I'm sure he'll be there. JR, Friday night, we're doing Rebels Karaoke. That's right. Rebel's going to be on stage performing songs and with all of us. It's going to be, what else do you need to hear to not buy a ticket to this?
Sweet girl, I can tell you that. She's an Oklahoma girl.
Yes, she is.
From Owosso, Oklahoma.
Oh,
suburb of Tulsa. Yeah, she's a sweetheart. I think the world of her. There's something for everybody.
That's right.
So I think adfreeshows.com has all your info.
It does. It does. Check it out. Rebel has her own happy hour show on Ad Free Shows that I'm a part of. It's a great time. Speaking of something for everybody, JR, before we get out of here, that's JR'sBBQ.com, man. Lots of great products over there. I just had some of your multi-purpose seasoning just on some steak this week, buddy. So good.
I appreciate it. Seasoning's one of our staples, and that's good. We tweaked the recipe on it a little bit to make it a little healthier. Some people have noticed that. Most haven't. Sales are up, so I think it's working. But yeah, the little packages that we sell that's got one of this, one of that. Great gift idea. And let's not forget Dad. Father's Day's coming up, man. We're close.
That's right.
And so you know, we'll help you out here. We can get it shipped to you. But the first thing you gotta do is go to JR'sBBQ.com and order some.
Honey, I want some barbecue from JR for Father's Day. All right, I just had to throw out the reminder. Sorry, go ahead, JR.
Yeah, I'm sure you're a great communicator.
Oh, man, but you're absolutely right. Father's Day's coming. What do I get him? I'm telling you, every father listening to this podcast would love a little JR BBQ packet. And you guys have some stuff where they can get, you know, a couple different sauces together, some packages and stuff like that. So take advantage of it.
Absolutely. And we have opportunities on the site where you can get things signed, whether it be books or photos or whatever the heck it is. But we'll make your Father's Day shopping right for you.
There you go.
Nice. Give us some consideration, and I can't ask for much more than that. Just give us tag us in.
Tag him in. You won't be upset that you did. JR, thank you so much. This has been a great episode. All things Jake the Snake Roberts. Like I said, we'll be back next week for Cactus Jack in WCW. On behalf of the voice of wrestling, Jim Ross, the Hall of Famer, this is Paul Bromwell. We'll see you right here next week on Grilling JR.
See you in Vegas, everybody. Come looking to have a good time, because that's what we're doing.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.